In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Now, I'm just kidding, I'm not recording. I'm kidding, I am recording.
Oh. I wonder if they can hear the birds outside.
I don't know. I didn't test it, so test it.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I barely heard that. You're going to have to talk more into the mic.
I'm looking right at it.
Yeah, but you're swiveling your eyes. And it's not
my
your,
eyes?
It's not your eyes.
What do my eyes have to do with it?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying you can see it because you're tilting your eyes, whereas your mouth has to be... You have to be talking right at it, not looking right at it. Where you're looking doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. What are we doing?
I don't know.
All right. Welcome to episode...
65.
For reals?
You know what? I'm a little disappointed because it's episode 65 and there's no gold watch. Where's the gold watch?
I had no idea that was associated with 65.
Well, when you 65 years old, it's like retirement age, right? And you get a gold watch from your work.
So we're retiring?
Yes. So from now on, we're still doing the podcast, but it's more of a puttering around kind of thing.
It's a hobby now, yeah. Rather than our vocation.
Right.
I see. Welcome to episode 65, the retirement episode of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast ranked number one amongst listeners of this podcast that don't listen to any other podcast.
Whoa. Boy, I miss a lot when I don't go to the business meetings.
Yeah.
Is it a plaque or something? I mean, do we get some? Oh, okay.
They told me, and I said, that's nice.
Oh, well, yeah, that is nice.
And I'm Tony.
And I'm William, the quiet one.
Because you won't get on the mic.
It's right here in front of my face.
Which is what's hilarious, because it's way the hell away from me. I'm way over here. And I move it right, like, literally, unless you were holding it between your knees, I could not get any closer to you.
That's true. There's cat hair on it.
Excuse me. There's cat hair on everything in my house.
Is that why you just sneezed? Or was that just a coincidence?
No, I've been having some sinus stuff today. I don't know what that's about. Anyway, welcome. Episode 65. Some of you may have been confused.
I was.
64 was actually 63, and 63 was actually 64.
Boy, it was just a mess.
I was going to fix it, but then I didn't, because I wasn't ever actually going to fix it.
Well, it was a plausible excuse. You know, the idea that maybe somebody had already downloaded the wrong one.
Yeah, see, that was the thing. I was like, then it was going to be all weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But mostly I just wasn't going to bother.
Right.
Because
well, those of
if
us
there's who... one thing we insist here, it's like our only real line that we will not cross. It's putting forth an effort.
Exactly. And those of us who know you realize that...
Well, that's my life philosophy, too. But I feel like it's a business model for the Hat Enterprises.
Sure. The Hat Enterprises.
Yeah. Google has don't be evil, and we're fine with being evil, is just don't put forth an effort. And that would be our actual mission statement, but we haven't bothered to make a mission statement. So, because you know what? Effort.
Well, evil requires effort too, so I suppose in a way we also agree that being evil is bad.
You can be tacitly evil. Let me just...
How?
Through inaction.
No, I understand that... I understand that the whole thing about how when the people who don't do anything are as guilty and don't stop evil are as guilty as the people who just go through with evil. But at the same time, there is a certain level where you have to acknowledge, yeah, those people really aren't doing anything.
But the number of times where I happen to be witness to horrific atrocities and actively, like, enthusiastically do nothing,
That is pretty awful. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that I have witnessed that I would have clapped for if I wasn't too lazy.
Chill your blood. Sure. Well, you know, that's the way the hat is, really. Maybe that's why the hat chose you.
Something's broken. Wait, okay. Hopefully that worked. I don't know. Just to make this episode extra exciting, we're updating my antivirus at the same time. So it stalled, but then it jumped up. So I don't know if it all went. I apologize, but I don't know.
Well,
now we're good.
I hope that when the antivirus software finds the actual podcast, I hope it's like, what do I want to say? It's
you
cloaked
hope that
or something.
It doesn't think the podcast is a virus.
Yeah, it's some kind of infection. I mean, it's definitely going to sense it's evil.
Given the stuff I put on this computer, I think that's the least of our worries.
Okay, that's good.
Police showing up.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. So welcome. Join us, won't you? Here we are. And it's been 2 weeks for us.
Yeah, for us it's been a couple
so
weeks.
So that's exciting. And something very important theoretically happened during that time. William,
what?
Did you do anything on Memorial Day weekend?
No.
On Saturday night?
Nope, I didn't do anything.
What the fuck, man?
Yes, I did.
Don't screw with me! Who taught you how to lie? What bad influence kids are you hanging around with that taught you that stuff?
Oh, wow.
Don't approve. Okay, so you did go. Don't fuck around with me.
Yes, I actually right. did go.
And with the other two?
Yes, yes, yes. And please remind me to get your season tickets out of the car.
Yeah.
They are in there. I do have them here, but I don't
want to. She will kill us if we don't have
them. Should I go get them right now?
No.
Okay.
You can get them while later.
Okay. Well, we have to remember because I don't.
There will be a time.
Okay. I don't want to. But yes, we did go, and it was. They lost, but
but close. It was like 19 points or some shit.
Yeah, what was going on was, as you probably know, our home team has only recently been admitted into like the professional leagues.
Yes.
Or whatever. But I believe this other group that they were competing against in this bout they're not in the professional league.
Really.
Right. So
I thought they only played against league people then.
Well, no. the group that was skating that night was like the B team, so to speak.
Okay.
See what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So we weren't watching the best skaters on the team. We were watching some there were some new people and
You mean our team?
Yeah, our team.
Our team's B team.
Yes, our team's B team.
Oh, I thought you were saying the other team was the B team.
No.
It was like, so
the other
we lost, but that's okay because team wasn't giving it their best.
No, the other team is a kind of a new team, and they're not in the professional league yet.
So we were trying to sort of even it out.
Right.
I see.
And
that would explain, too. I heard that somebody got to skate for the first time.
Possibly. I'm not sure. Now, there was an injury. I mean, the bout was stopped, and someone was taken away in an ambulance and everything.
Oh, they did the whole deal. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I've only seen that a few times.
She had two breaks, I guess. Yeah, she did.
She broke. For those who couldn't hear the producer in the background, she heard she broke a leg.
Yeah.
Wow. So the ambulance, like, left during the game.
Yes, yes.
Because I've seen people moved over to the ambulance on stretchers. Never seen so far as the ambulance actually going anywhere.
Yeah, she,
wow.
She broke her leg in two places, I think. And so what was interesting was they rotate jammers during the... I mean, I don't know how much people know about roller derby. So forgive me if this doesn't make any sense to you. But they rotate jammers, you know. Each jam has a different jammer. And... Yeah. What was happening with our team was there were two people especially who were really, really good at it. I mean,
the
other team couldn't even stop them.
I'm guessing Ophelia Fracture and Left 4 Dead were... Oh, no, that's right. This was the B team.
Right. So the B team, the only people on the... I mean, The B team had some people you would recognize, because obviously they don't have enough people to
completely... Yeah, they don't have an entire other...
Yeah, they don't have an entire B bench. So some of the people you'd recognize was Animal Mother was skating.
Woot! She and I talked on Twitter.
Killer Baker was skating, and there were a few others that you'd recognize. But I don't think any of the jammers were ones that you might know.
Okay.
But two of them were very good, really, really good, and the other team couldn't even begin to stop them. The rest of them were, it was pretty obvious that this might have even been their very first bout ever.
Okay.
So what would happen is those two would rack up the points, and the other three or four that were in the rotation would not do as well.
Yeah.
And the other teams, the other team had some pretty good jammers, so as long as their jammer wasn't skating against one of those two better skaters, they pretty much dominated the whole thing.
And to be fair, 19-point difference, especially in a game that was as high scoring as this one was, from what I saw, is pretty close.
Oh, no, that's true.
It's a very close score in Derby, for those who don't know.
Basically, they led the whole way, but what was happening was the two really good skaters would come in and bring the score a lot closer.
Yeah.
And then the other three or four skaters in the rotation would sort of lose that. And so it was basically we were going back and forth. We would be within 20, for example, or 19, like the final score was, and then we'd drop way down. And then those two good skaters would have to bring us clear back up within 20, and then the other skaters would take us back down. But, yeah, given that it wasn't the A team, basically, I mean, they weren't even dressed. They were there selling tickets and doing fun things. And it was, they were playing a team that's very new, who did a great job, by the way. I was really impressed with how they did. And it was fun to watch. It's the first bout I've been to. It's like the, I don't know.
That's what I'm much more interested in, is this was your first experience with live roller derby.
Yeah,
so I want to know how that was. I'm way less interested in how they played the game.
Oh.
Tell us about your experience.
Well, it was, just like anything that any sport you get interested in, but you've never seen it live, and the first time you do, it's very exciting, of course.
I'm guessing for you, unlike most people when they see Derby the first time, you weren't particularly confused, because you've studied up on it and watched stuff on the internet and things, so you know most people, their first Derby bout, afterwards, they're like, I don't understand how it worked, but it was fun.
No, I know a little bit about what's going on and what they're supposed to be doing and why they do certain things. Right now, there's kind of a debate in Derby, which is kind of interesting. A few years back, I watched online. I watched it's probably most comparable to like March Madness in college basketball, but it's Derby.
Yeah.
They have a big tournament, and the top, the person who wins the tournament is the top Derby team of the country or whatever. And I watched these online a few years ago. And I believe this was the first time that a new strategy was used in Derby where...
And I know it's one of two things you're about to say.
Okay, well, which one of two things?
It's either... what I think it is the taking a knee, the pack immediately stopping.
No.
The other thing is this going backwards thing.
Oh, well, actually what I was thinking of was the... Where the first whistle blows and the pack goes very slow up to the line.
Yeah.
And sometimes they like almost come to a dead stop at some points in the track.
Yeah.
I believe that the first time they ever did this was during one of these tournaments a few years ago that I was watching. So I think I watched the first time this was being done. And at the time, it was hailed as being a very creative way to deal with one of the teams and their particular strategy of roller derby. But immediately, a lot of other teams started using this strategy.
Including ours.
Even at times where it didn't really make very much sense.
And the big thing is, it's really dull to watch.
Well, that's the big debate. The debate is mostly centered around the fact that fans think it's boring.
In terms of the rules, it makes good strategic sense. It's really dull to watch.
Well, but it only makes good strategic sense sometimes. Here's the drawback. Okay, first of all, the reason that it's done, or that was originally done, and the strategic reason for doing it, is to sometimes slowing down the pace is really going to mess with the other team's strategy in how their jammers work and how many points they can rack up, and whether or not the other jammer can get through and stop the jam, because this is all part of how roller derby works. And if you don't understand, again, my apologies. But a lot of places you can look it up, and it'll explain it very easily for you exactly what we're talking
Everybody
about.
Everybody should look up about roller derby because it's the most awesome sport ever.
But the drawback to slowing down the pack, and by the pack we're talking about that group of women that one of the women on the other team has to get through in order to score points.
What the fuck are you doing?
The disadvantage of slowing it down is if their jammer is very effective in getting through, she's going to get back around.
It's just that much faster, yeah.
Yes. So it can become pretty obvious pretty quickly that this strategy won't work for some teams or won't work for some jams, and you have to abandon it right away if that's the case. You can't just keep going around the track really slowly, waiting for their jammer with a huge amount of momentum just to pop right by you and get all those points.
But there's another strategy involved in this, because this I've seen before, and it happens sometimes not right at the whistle, but if one of the jammers is in the penalty box, then you either go really fast or really slow, depending on whose jammer
it
is.
Well, that's right. That's
The factor you're not thinking of here, and part of what started that whole doing really slow at the beginning thing, is the idea is if the other team's blockers aren't doing it, they're going to get out of pack formation really fast.
No, that's true. That's true.
And then people get fouled out.
Yeah, that's right. They get called.
And that was some of the initial, because like literally they would stop and like stop dead at the whistle and not move.
Yeah.
To do just that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But now people are defending against it. But there's also versions of it now where they'll skate backwards.
Well, I didn't even know that you could do that.
Equally annoying.
Well, here's the thing. This is my feelings on it. When it was first done, and again, I think I was watching the first time anyone tried it. It did seem very clever and everything else. Like most people who think rules often ruin things, I'm not for them putting any rules in place to stop it. Because one thing I've observed is that it's a trick that really works mostly on its novelty.
Yeah.
That once the other team has figured out this is what you're doing, it's a pretty easy thing to get a strategy to beat it. So I have a feeling that eventually people will be smart enough to just stop doing it or only do it once in a while when it will surprise the other side. Like a lot of strategies in a lot of other games, you know, full court presses and things like that in basketball, you know, a lot of these things don't work every single time. They only work when you do them suddenly and you surprise the other team and then they have to adjust. And then, and then after they adjust, you have to stop it because, you know, it's only going to work in those contexts. So I have a feeling that it'll kind of work itself out, but it's been going on for a long time. And our team, I thought, it tried to use that strategy to very poor effect and they didn't snap out of it. I mean, they kind of let the other team rack up points instead of picking up the pace. And I hope they've sort of learned that, okay, well, this only works in very specific circumstances, and we really need to be able to abandon this strategy when it's clearly not
working. Our team has been a big adopter of this, and our team is smart. But, yeah, they were very pleased with this to start with. So, you liked it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. I don't know when I'll ever be able to go back, but I thought it was quite fun.
They got another game in 2 days.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to be there, and the producer's sister will come with us.
The two jammers who did well for our team were, I mean, phenomenal. I mean, I couldn't believe. One in particular, she was very tall, and which is sometimes really difficult for a tall player to really be that effective because it's easy to get pushed down.
Or whatever. Yeah.
But when she was the jammer, she was running through, I mean, running through the pack. Like, I mean, she looked like a pro running back or something. She was so agile and, you know, spinning around and going through little openings and stuff.
I still get amazed at some of these. I mean, the skill involved is ridiculous. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And when you watch the professional championship tournaments, you see a lot of that stuff, really impressive stuff. And I guess it was just really cool to go to this little gathering of people, local. And I realize they're now a professional team, but wow.
Well, they're not. It's an amateur league. I mean, well, it's an official league. But
you know, that's true. That's true. But just to see the athleticism, really from everybody, not just the jammers, but it was really fascinating. And one thing I like about derby, as opposed to just about any other sport where there are women involved. I mean, because derby throughout the country, there's a lot of all-male and co-ed derby. This particular kind of derby is all-female. What I like about it is that you see women of every shape and size out there playing. Yeah. It's not, you don't see like when women's basketball league was more popular, you know, mostly one kind of woman, you know, is athletic and thin or whatever. It was still great and I loved it, but it didn't seem like there was a place for a woman who might be a little heavier or a little different body type
or shorter. Or
shorter, especially for basketball. But it doesn't matter. I mean, when it comes to derby, anything goes. And
not only
really
are they all okay,
them.
But the efficacy is there. I mean, there's different styles. Mm-hmm. And you and I actually sat in an IHOP one time and talked for like 2 hours about this, about all the things we loved about roller derby, mm-hmm. and how basically odds are, once it became like an actual professional sponsored thing, all of those factors would go away.
No, that's probably
true. And
that's
one right there, because at a certain point they would find out what things are most effective, what body type fits with that, and everybody would recruit for that and would train for that.
Yeah,
and
I
there's
suppose.
Just so many things, but at this point it's grassroots. They're doing it for the fun of it, and it's awesome stuff, and it takes a lot of dedication, and it's just awesome to watch. And as I always say, like, women of all shapes and sizes in fishnets and short shorts on wheels just beating the snot out of each other. There's no way, especially if you're a straight male, that you cannot see the enjoyment of that, really. It's awesome.
Well, also, the sportsmanship is incredible. I mean, the women get along great, and it doesn't matter. You know, you lose your bout, it's fine, and they're getting along like nothing happened.
Very seldom have I actually seen, like, hostility between teams.
Yeah.
And it's so seldom that it's always really shocking to me I see that.
No, that's,
they all get
that's
along great.
Not to say they're not competitive. I mean, when they're out there, there's no doubt about it. They want to win, and you know, you are the enemy. And but even between actual jams,
they'll hang out and chat.
Yeah.
While the pack is standing there because the officials are checking something,
it's
they'll like hang out.
Yeah, they don't care. I mean, now when the whistle blows, that's a whole different thing.
It's a thing.
But when the jam is over and they're getting ready, they're pals.
It's because it's such huge commitment. There's so much time spent, and it's so physically demanding, and you're not making any money from it.
No.
And so I think you have to appreciate all your compatriots involved that are also giving it that.
Yeah.
It seems tremendously empowering, and I'm still really proud of the fact that our team, and I don't want to disparage other teams, but our team is, everybody involved is women. The coaches and the people who work with the equipment, all women. And I really like that because I find it very empowering, and I found the other teams that I see that are all of these women out there doing this, and then there's a guy in a suit standing by the bench telling them what to do. And I mean, I don't want to speak ill of that, but it's just, I find it so cool that ours isn't like that.
And the male coach is really the rule, actually, in the whole league. That's the most common thing.
What I have seen most of the time, I spent a lot of time in the beginning watching this team and the Quad Cities team play each other. They were sort of like sister teams in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both all females, and so I got used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they got into this league and started playing others, I was like, huh?
Well, now, I thought it was interesting to see a league official there. That's a new thing, right, for them to have a league official there?
I don't think I've seen that. I mean, they have a lot of refs, but I don't know.
Well, like, the league official was, like, involved, and I mean, he had a shirt that said that on it, and like, I think he was key in starting each jam and stuff or something.
What was his name?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay,
but he wasn't wearing a black and white shirt. He was wearing like this blue shirt, and it said like league official or something.
I don't know what that's about.
Never seen that before.
No,
I wondered if that was kind of a new thing since they got admitted or whatever.
Well, and to be fair, they got admitted last season, and I missed most of last season.
Oh,
And there's only been one other home game this season, so it looks, based on the thing that y'all may have heard, the motorcycle, so enjoy that.
So yeah, I went, and it was very enjoyable. It was great. It was fun to see.
And your companions enjoyed it?
Oh yeah, they always do.
Well, they haven't been that many times.
No, it hasn't been that many.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not the cheapest thing to go do.
No, it really kind of isn't. I do like that kids like under 10 are free, and that's kind of cool. Okay. But it's not. For us with no kids and two incomes, it's not too bad. But I communicate on Twitter with Animal Mother and Left 4 Dead Words. Like, we both follow each other, and we talk. and the actual Twitter account for the team that's actually tweeted at me before publicly, and an account called Shit Roller Girls Say, which is hilarious. And then a friend from high school who lives in Oregon still is a huge Derby girl over there, and so I hear a lot from her about it. So it's very cool. So there you go, folks. That is the most sports you will ever hear on the Magical Talking Hat. Every once in a while, I'll let William talk about baseball ball for about 2 minutes. That's it. Otherwise, this is the only sport that's really going to come up.
You know, something I should say. You mentioned the women wearing fishnet stockings and short shorts and all that stuff. Another thing about it, though, is that you don't really get the impression that the women, you know, they come up with these silly names and stuff, and they dress in these somewhat provocative ways, I guess you could say. But you don't get the impression they're doing that for, like, the male viewer.
Or even for the audience. No, that was what I was going to bring up with the whole strategy thing.
Yeah.
The Derby girls are not out there for the people watching.
No.
The people watching are cool.
Yeah.
But that's not what they're for. No, it's very much a punk rock vibe.
Yeah, right. And the sexual angle and innuendos and stuff in their names, they're not trying to titillate anybody in the crowd. They're just being... It's something they're doing to amuse themselves, really. Yes. Like you said, punk. There's definitely a punk rock vibe to it. So, I mean,
there's some pretty heavy homoeroticism, let's be honest. And a surprisingly smaller number than I expected on average of Derby girls are actual lesbians. But there's a lot of homoeroticism, kind of like with professional football,
I suppose.
Are you kidding? Those girls cannot keep their hands off each other's butts. And I'm not talking about during the jams, all the time. And most of them are straight. But, you know, and so, there's not that display thing.
No, I think there's
very much not that.
I think there's a common misconception that it's like
it was in the 60s and 70s.
Well, or even like lingerie football is now.
Yeah, no.
That's not really what's going on.
No.
But that said...
it's still pretty damn sexy.
Well, no. What I was going to say was, lingerie football isn't what a lot of people think it is either.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those women are serious football players playing serious football, and it's really sad that they can't play in full uniform and full pads. I mean, it's really, really sad. I mean, I find that really disturbing. And now there's going to be a bikini hockey league. You know, remember when... Didn't the women in hockey in the Olympics do, like, there was some big deal, right? One year, gosh, I just can't remember. Someone's going to have to remind me.
This is a sport that's not roller derby, so I have no idea.
Well, no. There was some time where women competed in hockey in the Olympics, and the American team did really well or something, and a lot of young girls wanted to play hockey after that. This was some time ago. I don't remember when. But then I never heard about women's hockey anymore, and the first thing I hear about women's hockey again... It's, they're going to have a bikini league. It's like, are you serious? Women can't play football without playing it in their underwear, and they can't play hockey without playing in bikinis. This is stupid. I find this really sad. I mean, and disgusting.
Sports, people, and porn is porn, and the two should be separate things.
Well, the women who play lingerie football, I mean, some of them are, I mean, they're serious athletes playing serious football, and it's just... sad that, I don't know, I just think it's sad.
I agree that it's sad,
but derby is a completely different thing. I mean, they're doing is, I mean, if you ever go to a bout, you'll realize it's not the same thing.
It is badass. Like, yeah, no, it's not.
Although I suspect that if it gets more you know, quote unquote legitimate, you know, they're going to have to get rid of the silly names, and they're going to have to wear uniforms that seem more practical.
I don't know. It depends on how it gets corporatized, but I'm hoping it doesn't for quite a while, if ever.
Well, I think a lot of the players feel that way, too. I mean, they'd like to make a living at it, but at the same time, they realize what they'd be losing if that happened.
Yeah. But no, check it out. Seriously, it is not the trashy, you know, foxy boxing bullshit. No, this is hardcore stuff here. This is the punk rock of athletics.
That's a really good way to put it, actually.
And yes, it's sweeping the nation, but it's not quite such a big deal now that you'll look like a follower. If you still get into it now, you can still get all hipster about it and say, I liked roller derby before, it was cool. Like, move on that. Make that happen.
Oh, well, and a bigger thing here to consider is this. If you are one of our female listeners, I encourage you to try it out. I mean, a lot of women do it and love it, and I've got a lot of female friends who I thought would really love it, and then they did love it, and some of them decided maybe they're going to try out.
And if you try it, we will totally, like, give you free publicity on the show all over the place. Right. We will tell everybody when you're playing.
It's that's so valuable. But it's all we got.
Tens of viewers across the world.
But it's all we got. I did want to mention one more thing that I was kind of excited to hear. A couple days ago, it was announced somewhat officially that Warner Brothers in DC, they are actually going to try to do a Justice League movie, you know, kind of in the same vein as Avengers. And the Man of Steel movie coming up is supposed to plug in to a future Justice League movie, and I'm pretty excited about that. What I'm not excited about, however, is the information they shared about what they're going to do about Wonder Woman.
What are they going to do about Wonder Woman?
Well, just the fact that...
Are they putting her in pants again?
I don't know. Just the fact that the guy that they've selected to write the script was one of the co-writers for the Green Lantern movie. Goldenberg, I think his
name
is.
That's a bad sign.
I'm not too enthused about that. He also co-wrote Contact. Long time.
Also not a good time.
Well, Contact wasn't that bad.
Contact was pretty bad.
He was a primary.
Actually, the best thing that came out of Contact was a line amongst my friends that said, "Well, you know, if it is just us, seems like an awful waste of 2 hours."
Contact wasn't that bad.
He
was also the main writer in Order of the Phoenix. But none of these things impressed me because...
They weren't that good?
Well, not just that, but the one time where he's given material, and of course Green Lantern isn't original material either, but it's not like there's a novel out there he's making the screenplay based on.
Yes, no, and it's also a superhero.
Right.
Which, and, you know, like, that's the thing.
And it came out so poorly, it seems like, I can't believe Warner Brothers is saying, oh yeah, you're the guy for this. Well, and just the fact that there's a guy for the... Why can't a woman write this script? I mean, maybe she would bring something... I mean, it's a female superhero. In fact, when she was created, first introduced, she was supposed to be a feminist, you know... She was meant to be sort of a feminist icon. It wasn't just an accident.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it'd be nice if when they reintroduced her that they still stuck to that kind of thing. But I don't really think that's even what they have in mind. So that's too bad.
But then again, this is the same company that made third-tier alternate Earth Green Lantern their big spotlight gay character. So. Oh,
can you believe that? Can you believe that? I mean, technically, he was, I mean, historically, Golden Age, the first Green Lantern, but come on.
Well, no, but that's the thing, though. Technically, that name is the name of the guy who was the first Green Lantern.
That's right.
This is from an alternate dimension
where
people are gay.
Where people are gay.
And the only reason we're doing it is because we completely wrote his already gay son out of continuity.
Right, that's right, that's right.
And really the only reason we're doing it is because our major competition was having a gay wedding in their comic book.
Yes, yes, yes.
So pretty much all around, fuck you, DC.
That
being said, we'll take it because we need your goddamn breadcrumbs.
But wait. The big mistake they made was in trying to make out like there was this big announcement.
Absolutely.
If they hadn't done that, it wouldn't have been such a big deal.
Absolutely.
But
if they had just done it quietly, we all would have thought that was awesome.
Sure, or we would have understood it and thought, well, that, like, was an interesting movement.
But they're like, we're going to be so progressive.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it was the whole media thing around it, that's what was so bad. Oh, a main DC character is going to come out as gay. Wow! Green Lantern, what? Oh, wait.
Yeah, when I first heard that, I was like, that's awesome. Then I'm like, wait, that's not really...
No.
Yeah, no.
No, no.
Okay, we are so in the thing now, so I want to really quickly go through my 2 weeks.
Okay.
Really quickly.
Sorry.
The only parts I have to tell, actually, are... saw two movies. Men in Black 3.
Oh, no.
And Dark Shadows.
Really? Wow.
I did not choose Dark Shadows. I think I chose Men in Black 3. Because I was gonna, because I saw the first two. I was gonna do it, you know. I did not choose Dark Shadows. Basically, here's the deal. Men in Black 3. Did you see Men in Black 1 and 2? Yeah, you might as well see Men in Black 3. Did you not see Men in Black 2? Doesn't matter. Men in Black 2 sucked. Is this better than Men in Black 2? Yes, but that's a pretty low bar.
Yeah,
is it really good? No. It's not that funny. Will Smith phoned it in. Not that good. But it's fine. I mean, it's fine. I wasn't mad that I saw it or anything. It's fine. So, yeah, I've seen it. They need to stop making them now.
I'll probably just wait.
But you can totally wait.
Brolin doing Jones, though, come on.
Was freaky.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
And it had a line in it that made me want to punch Emma Thompson in the face, which made me feel sad because I love Emma Thompson. And she's funny, and by and large, she did well in this movie. But she said a line that I'm like, the fact that she didn't walk out when she saw that line in the script. She said the line, "How long have you been craving chocolatized dairy?"
What?
And I'm like, when you saw that line, you should have said, "I'm Emma fucking Thompson. I don't need this shit." And you should have left, and you didn't, so I kind of want to punch you in the face. And that's sad, because, yeah. No, it's not good, but it's not awful, and it's better than two. So, you know, see it, don't see it, doesn't really matter.
We'll probably wait.
Dark Shadows.
Well, I really can't believe you even went to see
it. I didn't want to see it.
And?
It's not good. I would not recommend you see it. And here's the problem. It's not that bad. But it's not good. It is, first and foremost, boring.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It is really boring, really tedious. You can't even really make fun of it. It's not bad enough for that. But it's certainly not good enough to not be counting the seconds. So... by the way, disclaimer, these are all my personal positions. I can't say what the producer thought. But, yeah, really, really boring. And also had a line in it that was so bad, I wanted to walk out. Not because it was offensive or in poor taste or anything like that. It was just a dumb line that was so dumb that I seriously, for a second, considered walking out of the theater. I didn't, but I thought about it, because it was that dumb. Yeah, so that was my 2 weeks. There you go.
Excellent.
All right, we are at 37 minutes, so we should probably get to some hat stuff, now that we're done with the sports report.
Some serious hat action.
All right. For those of you who don't know about this podcast, because you're weird, we found a magical hat that you can email, and when you email it, we draw the questions and topics out of that hat and talk about them until we get bored. If you would like to write the hat, you should do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com and write us in and ask us a question, give us a topic, and maybe we'll talk about it if we draw it out. Like William just did.
Like I just did. I have one right here.
Who's it from?
Well.
Is it fucking Azure Talon?
I don't like to say because I don't like it when you're sad.
Fucking Azure Talon. Congratulations, Azure Talon. I don't remember if we said it before, but he really is married now.
Yeah, you did say that before.
Okay, so old married Azure Talon.
Magical Talking Hat Podcast. Where does the toe tag go on a dead person if they don't have toes?
Well, trick question. All dead people have toes.
Well, no. No. What?
Yes.
Why would you say that?
All dead people. Even if you were born without legs, at death, little toes sprout out. It's a thing.
To begin with, the whole toe tag thing. I mean, is that a real thing or is that just something in TV and movies?
I don't know. I don't think that's the official name for it. But I do think that's where you put the tag because that's how the bodies are in the drawers. Right? I mean, if you stuck it on, like, their finger, you'd have to pull it out further to see who it was.
I don't know.
They could do sideways drawers, and then you could put it wherever you wanted. But
I really don't.
That would be much less space effective. If,
but I do think it's true. If your main cataloging method for a cadaver is to stick something on the toe, and their legs are blown off, or they were born without legs, or whatever, where does it go after that? I suppose there's space on the table for you to just lay it down there.
Oh!
You don't have to put it on anything.
I didn't even think of that. That's probably the answer. You put it where the toes would be.
Just right there on the table.
Yeah.
But I don't even...
Or you staple it through something.
I have no idea if the whole toe tag thing is based on any actual practice or if that's just something Hollywood did.
Toe tags are a myth started by the French.
Well, I mean, I'm
when
thinking
they got tired of playing soccer.
You know how in movies, especially if the story is set 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there's always a chart at the end of the person's bed, and you pick it up and you read it. I in all the hospitals I've ever been in since I was young, and I've been in lots for various reasons, I've never seen that.
You mean at the end of the bed or a
chart? No, just at the end of the
bed. They totally have charts.
No, just at the end of the bed there. And even the charts I have seen, well, first of all, they're kept in a different place, and they don't look like the ones in the movies exactly. Yeah. I've never seen one look like that. But yes, they do have charts, but it's not quite the way they show it in TV shows.
Well, it gets you worse than that. Stat, that whole paging duct or whatever, stat, total bullshit. And here's the one I like. When somebody flatlines, doesn't make that noise. That beep. That noise means that it's been disconnected. So yeah, but I think that toe tag. I don't know. Somebody research toe tags.
Well, in a way, it doesn't matter because, again, I mean, I suppose if all they have missing are their toes, well, then you can still put it over the foot
because they
give
you very little string.
No, it's obviously kind of a. What do they call those? Slipknot kind of thing where you can make it as big as you need to.
They should do like a slap bracelet. That would be much easier. You just pick up the foot, stick it on the ankle.
I'm just not sure where the whole toe tag thing even came from. And I would think that whoever came up with the idea would give you the ability to put it other places and for that very reason. Because there's going to be some times where the victim has their legs are gone.
The genius who invented the toe tag was unable to conceive of a dead body without toes. It's a savant.
Yeah, whatever.
They could come up with this idea, but the concept of a toeless corpse completely alien to them.
I'm really tempted to think that Hollywood made this whole toe tag thing up. I could be wrong.
That doesn't sound like it.
But if I am, I think you could, like I say, you could just make the loop a little wider and put it around what's left of the foot, or you could just put it on the table there where the space is, where the legs would normally be. I think you could just do that. But
so there you go, Agitalin. We think you're buying into some sort of media conspiracy. So don't do that. All right. Thanks for your question.
You don't really mean that.
I do not mean that.
Lack of sincerity is palpable.
Oh, so much. All right, let's pull out this one. It's not from Azure Talon. I am happy. It's Beth.
Oh.
It's our good friend, How Do You Cook Chicken, Beth. Who's going on a cruise soon with her sibling, which I find weird. Asking for more advice, it seems. What is the best way to wish someone felicitations of the season when you are unsure of their religious preferences? Beth.
Wow. That can be a really difficult thing, actually.
I really don't feel like it should be.
Well, but it kind of is.
I don't feel like it should be. I feel it's ridiculous.
You don't feel like it should be?
No.
Well, what difference does it make what it should be? The fact
because
that it is
the people for whom it becomes difficult are assholes, is what I'm saying.
Well,
here's the thing.
No. Wait. I don't think the problem is that you think the person will be offended. I think the problem is you would just like to look like you give a damn about what they think, I guess. I mean, you know what I'm trying to say?
But here's the thing. Yes. If I've had a conversation where you've told me you're Jewish, and that you celebrate Hanukkah, because the two are not
necessarily equal, go together, that's right.
Then I look like an asshole if I don't say Happy Hanukkah. Maybe, maybe.
Well.
But if I have no idea, and I have no way that I could know, I'm going to say Happy Holidays, and you should deal. And I should not feel bad, and you should deal, and it should be fine.
Okay, but you said...
But even more so, that is as PC as I get about it. What I really think you do, I should wish you felicitations of my fucking holiday, because it's mine, and that's the thing I'm wishing you happy, and you should deal. It's like, I'm not, I'm going to say God bless you if I believe in God. I'm not going to say some other deity that you believe in bless you if that's not my religion. I don't talk to that one. Why would I ask that one for blessings? I'm asking my God for blessings for you. There you go. Happy Kwanzaa. Also, is there a religion attached to Kwanzaa, really? I mean,
not that I'm aware of.
So your only options there are somebody has to explicitly tell you they celebrate Kwanzaa, or you have to be a fucking racist and just assume they do because they're black. And then you get punched in the face. Don't ask me how I know that.
Okay.
I think Happy Holidays is fine, people.
You really have some deep feelings about this.
I do, because if I have to sit through one more goddamn December of the war on Christmas bullshit, I'm going to punch people in throats.
Well, why do you let yourself get worked up about it? I mean, there's no war on Christmas. Because
Beth asked the question. I was fine five more months.
Okay, now, Beth, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all she's doing is she's trying to think of what's the polite thing to do. It's not that
say happy holidays.
It's not that she thinks someone's going to chop her head off. She just wants to show consideration. That's all.
Happy holidays. Or really, I think you should go with whichever one is yours.
Now, see, that's the most interesting thing you've said in this whole thing, is this notion of, like, I think what you said a second ago about saying God bless you or whatever, people who believe in God, you know, the Judeo-Christian God, let's put it that way, the Judeo-Christian Muslim God, really, because they're all from the same tradition.
Oh, you're going to get us killed.
Whatever. They might say God bless you, and when they say that, I think generally when people hear someone say that, they don't think, oh, I'm so offended because I'm an atheist or I don't believe in your God. They understand that...
Well, some people do, but those people are assholes.
Well, okay.
Mostly atheists with a stick up their butt.
But mostly people don't, because they understand that what this means from them, and they actually appreciate it. Which I think is the right response to have.
Uh-huh. Argument extrapolates exactly to what I'm saying with holidays.
Well, that's an interesting... 100%. I never thought about that before.
Yeah. Because I'm a genius.
But see now, you might wish people a happy solstice, for example.
Nah, I usually go with Merry Christmas. I celebrate a lot of shit.
But if
people, here's the thing.
But see, solstice is a thing. I mean, that is something that happens. It's a celestial event that affects everybody.
I'm not much of anything these days, but the closest public face I got religiously is I'm pagan.
Mm-hmm.
People who know that, but aren't, like, good friends or whatever, wish me happy solstice, happy Yule, and it pisses me off.
Well, why?
It feels patronizing.
Why?
Because I'm like, you don't even know what those things really are.
Oh,
you're just picking shit that you think sounds good to me. Wish me Merry Christmas, because you know what? You're celebrating Christmas, and that's what you mean. It's essentially saying, happy whatever kind of Christmas you people celebrate. It's incredibly patronizing to me. See, I would have less issue with that, I think, if I were more mainstream something. Like if I was Jewish and somebody wished me Happy Hanukkah who's not Jewish, I feel like they would at least understand. But I'm just like, you don't even know what that means. You picked that up because you heard I was pagan, and somebody told you that that's the word for it. But, like, you don't even know what you're wishing me. Just wishing me Merry Christmas.
Well.
So, it's a thing.
I mean, you know, from my perspective, and I mean, I think I don't want to read too much into why Beth is asking this question. In other words, read my own reasons for asking a question like this.
I know Beth. Beth belongs to the Church of Satan, and the holidays get really tricky for Satanists.
But during the period of time in Western culture when we have, you know, we call it the holiday season as if holidays don't exist the rest of the year.
They don't.
But for whatever reason in Western culture, and American culture is specifically is very big on this. The holidays around the solstice are, you know, really important. You know, among the most important, that's when we celebrate our New Year. And there's just this general, it's just common for people to wish each other some kind of happy holiday, whatever. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, whatever. But you know that not everybody recognizes these things. I know a lot of Christians who don't celebrate Christmas because it's a pagan holiday and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's
Jehovah's Witness in particular won't.
You know, if you don't feel like you know someone well enough to know what they're celebrating, but you suspect, like everybody else, they're celebrating something because, I mean, just about everyone, even if they're not celebrating the holidays you know about, solstice, whatever, they're going to be getting together with family anyway, exchanging gifts probably in a room with a Christmas tree in it, you know. I mean, just about everybody does that regardless of what their affiliations are, unless they're very orthodox in a particular way of belief. And I mean Christians too, because again, a lot of really orthodox Christians won't celebrate Christmas because they think it's a pagan holiday. But I mean, you know, I know atheists who they spend Christmas at someone's house and there's a Christmas tree and they're exchanging gifts.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just about everybody is buying gifts
that's
for each other during this year.
Atheists are really greedy though.
No, but you get what I'm saying, that it's a holiday season pretty much for everyone by now. So you're pretty safe to say happy holidays and it's going to apply to everybody.
Absolutely.
And not just because, oh, this person's celebrating Kwanzaa and this person's celebrating Hanukkah, but because everybody's getting together with family this time of the year regardless. And so it's the holiday season in a very generic and secular way. I mean, it just is.
Magical Talking Cat would like to apologize to our orphan listeners who clearly aren't even in William's worldview. You're right. Happy Holidays is the weak-ass answer that is perfectly functional.
But I don't think
if you're going to grow a spine, just use whatever one yours is.
Well, I don't think it's weak or politically correct. I just think the fact of the matter is, you know, Christmas itself is highly secularized. I mean, you know, people have time off. You know, companies are giving people time off and state entities like schools have time off. It's highly secularized. I mean, I think saying happy holidays isn't just politically correct. It's just culturally appropriate. It just works.
Okay, from now on, when people sneeze, you just have to say, I wish you well.
Or you don't have to say anything. But I do appreciate
keep it inside, asshole.
I do appreciate the point you're making about, you know, if someone wishes you a happy or merry whatever, and it's their particular observance, that you can take that the same way you'd take it if they said God bless you or whatever. It's like, this is them wishing me well. I should appreciate that.
I'm a smart guy.
Yeah.
I know this stuff. By the way, though, this brings up a point. I want to check this out. People test this out. If somebody you see is about to sneeze, yell the word pineapple at them and see if it stops them. I'm testing a theory that you can't sneeze somebody did that.
I don't think Beth's question is about how do I deal with jerks who don't understand if I say Merry Christmas.
Yeah, because those are fuckers.
I think she just wants to be polite.
You should say Happy Holidays or suck it up and say Merry Christmas. Or, sorry, Hail Satan. Sorry. But yeah. Okay, I'm tired of this question. Thank you, Beth, for your question. I know that sounds exactly like when I thank Azure Talon, but in your case, I thank you.
He does mean it.
I'm lying to him.
It's a very subtle thing, but I can tell.
It's
the nonverbals.
I'm making a lot of gestures when I do it.
Yeah, it's all in how he looks when he's saying it.
All right, hurry up. We got to fit this one in here.
Dear Magical Talking Hat, discuss...
Who's it from?
I'll get to that. Discuss body image, male and female, in America versus the rest of the world, Kia B.
Oh.
Well, we were kind of already addressed this in a way with the whole roller derby thing. It's kind of a...
I find this an interesting thing. Because here's the deal. I am quite fat. However, when I leave this country, I am even fatter. Mm. I've noticed this in the UK, other parts of Europe. I noticed it recently in Canada, because American obesity is much bigger thing. In general, most of the first world, as it were, is getting fatter. Mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons, mm-hmm. of which there is much contention. But in America especially, so I'm fat here, but I don't stand out nearly as much if I go to other countries. Right. I'm like really fat.
Okay, well the question though is, how, I mean, what
well,
do you...
Well, I'm getting to how this ties in.
Okay.
So I wonder if... I wonder how that impacts... how you look at yourself. I mean, I wonder if somebody in this country of a certain body, weight, and shape and size views themselves differently than in a different country that has relatively similar culture, just because there's less of an obesity epidemic where they are. I wonder if people thinking themselves hideously fat in a different country, if they were raised in this country and weighed the same, would be like, I'm not that bad. I wonder if that, and I mean, Americans have issues with this, men and women. What I have sadly discovered is that female body image is so deeply, deeply socialized to the degree that I am incapable of comprehending it. Mm-hmm. Every time I think I get it and I get the motivations and I get where it's coming from, I don't. To the degree that I believe most women don't either. It starts sometime really early in upbringing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's become so hegemonic now that it's just beyond my comprehension.
What? In the United States, I mean, you don't have to look very far to find research or anyone talking about this. The body image issues in relation to the female body are just incredible. Women in magazines, models in magazines are photoshopped so much that they don't represent any woman who actually exists, and yet they're on this cover almost as if to make the women looking at this image think, oh, this is the ideal body, a body that doesn't exist, that nobody has, not even the original model has this body.
How, Ezzy?
It starts very early, like you said. I mean, little girls in kindergarten know what the ideal body is supposed to look like, or they think they know. And you know, you've got girls in elementary school who are talking about being too fat and need to diet when they're just normal little girls. This has been a problem in the United States for a very long time. It persists as a horrible problem. There's a fairly good documentary about this called Misrepresentation that you can get it from Netflix, and I encourage anyone to watch it. It's actually quite good, that talks about this very thing in detail. As far as the male body image, you know, as someone who lived with a couple of teenage males for a while, I can tell you that there are ideals about, you know, the male body out there that a lot of young men are very stressed out about in trying to fit into these types of to look like these men.
Yeah.
It's not anything close to what women deal
no,
with.
No, and it's not as constant, because I have this. I have major issues as well. Sort of when I remember to.
Well, yes.
I just don't think about my body a lot. Every once in a while, if I look in the mirror, I really do not like my body. But I just don't think about it. I'm very separated from it most of the time.
I think that's the way most men are.
And I believe with women that never happens.
No, that's
you're
right.
Never
I,
not.
I think you're right about that. And also the men who have to worry about their body, there are a number of body types that they can be okay with.
Yeah.
Whereas with women, there's like one, two at the most.
Yeah.
And nothing else is good enough. So I don't want to say that there isn't some body image things that men deal with today, but it doesn't even touch where women are at in terms of, like you said, how constant it is, how specific it is.
And so deeply rooted that, I mean, I couldn't begin to deconstruct it fully.
Well, right. And not only that, but any man who doesn't fit into that male body image thing, well, he's not likely going to be obsessed with that or get an eating disorder over. I mean, that does
kill
happen.
Themselves.
Yeah, or kill them. Does happen, but
not as often.
But
not remotely.
With a woman, if she's not fitting that ideal, it's going to bother her all the time. A man can go.
And there's going to be a lot of external pressure.
Yeah, a man can usually go, yeah, and then just stop worrying about it.
And that's the thing. I've been fat pretty much my whole life, and yes, the doctor says you should lose some weight. Every once in a while, somebody who thinks they're being helpful tries to give me some advice as though I didn't know how to not be fat. Much more common that the world is telling women they're fat all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Be it family and friends and all the media and everything like that. Not nearly as much reinforcement for the men.
Now, to me, it's quite obvious the difference between how men deal with this, or you know, what men experience and what women experience in relation to this. It has to do with men have privilege that women don't have, and this is one of the privileges men have: is that if a man doesn't fit the body image that's presented as the ideal body image, you know, I don't know, you know, James Bond or whatever, if he doesn't fit that body image, well, he's still part of the privileged class, you know.
Well, I mean, defined by different things. As long as he's making enough money,
yeah,
who cares?
Making enough money. I mean, the women are still primarily competing for male attention, and that's what defines their world. That's what defines their life. And so, even the lowest status man is going to feel better off than the other half of the population that's female. But women being in the position where they have to impress men and they have to earn acceptance into the male world, well, it's going to be a much bigger deal. Now, that dynamic exists all over the world, especially in the West, and I think that weighs heavily on you know, just about every woman's mind. However, I have observed that in the rest of the world there is some greater tolerance for women having different body styles and shapes, and also at different phases of their life looking a little different or being a little heavier. Like in our country, you know, if a woman is middle-aged, you know, she still has to look like she's, I don't know, she can't age past 30 or 40 or something. Whereas in other countries, I've seen a lot more tolerance for, you know, a woman who's 50 to look like she's 50, whatever that looks like. And usually that means that she can be a little heavier or not have a what we might call here a girlish figure. But I still think the West is, even though the United States is worse in everything, like you said, worse in obesity and also worse when it comes to body type, I think it only gets slightly better in Europe. Now, as far as the rest of the world goes, I don't know. I don't know what, say, body image issues exist in China, for example. I have no idea. None. I don't know. You know, or
the
certain
funny
countries
part
in
is
Africa.
Neither do the Chinese, because they're not allowed to.
but any Western country, I think you're going to find similar issues everywhere you go.
Well, and there's major issues I know in Japan too.
I don't know what those issues are. Even do you or?
They're pretty much there's a specific Asian beauty, female beauty ideal that they have to live up to. That's similar to the Western one, but
well,
more dainty.
Do they have a? Do they have a also a male body image ideal? And
no, really not.
Not at all. Okay.
There are some people who get into, you know, fan stuff, but no, I think there's an even bigger dichotomy there. I thought we had a listener from Japan, but we don't, so they can't speak to it. So you'll just have to trust my word on it. And we are way over time now, so we should cut it out. I'm sorry, actually, to lose such a good topic.
Yeah, because one thing I want to talk... This is one of the things that I'm kind of worried about with the Wonder Woman movie is that, you know, they're going to have scenes on the island, and what are these women going to look like?
Cloris Leachman.
Well, no.
No, but Cloris Leachman was Wonder Woman's mom.
Well, I know in the show, but what I'm saying is...
And she didn't look bad either.
It makes sense that the island would have women of every size, shape, and shade, but that's not going to happen.
No.
And I... That makes me very upset just to know that's not going to happen. But whatever.
All right, so... Yeah, that was an episode.
Well, thank you, Kia B.
Got a little sportsy.
Beth and Azurtown.
Got a little feminist. There we are.
Yeah, I wish we'd drawn that one first, because I think we could talk about a lot of things in relation to that that are very bothersome in the world today.
Well, somebody write in a similar question, and we'll have to talk about it again. in the meantime, that's it for tonight. Go to the blog, check some shit out there. A lot of our hard hats like to talk there. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. The producer likes to talk there. In fact, just earlier today or yesterday, she was out there saying things. Go check that out. By the way, Mark, if you know how, tell the producer how to subscribe to the blog so that she can get a notification every time somebody puts a comment on any entry. Because she wants to know how to do that. I think that's it. Say goodnight, Ezzy.
Close enough.
You think they heard that?
I don't know.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.